Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Excited about Packers 49ers this weekend. Should be a very fun game. We're going to break down the injury report in just a moment, some key injuries that we found out about from both sides on Friday. Also, we're going to be going over the cornerback position and why Green Bay has had a failure of fairly epic proportions at that spot. We're going to touch base on that in just a moment. Before we get there, want to tell you about Autograph. If you haven't done, what are you waiting for? Just quick, go to your app right now. Beep, 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 beep. Download the app. That's what it sounds like. And then you can just get unbelievable Packers content every single day. So I did an episode exclusively for Autograph earlier this week, breaking down five Packers that are better than you probably think that they are doing. So make sure to check out that. Also, I'm going to be chatting over there at halftime of the game. Your Packers 49ers, right? Halftime, Packers will be leading 28-0. We'll break it all down. Whatever it may be, good, bad, ugly, we'll talk all about it. You're not doing anything at halftime anyway. You're going to load up on snacks really quick, and then you're going to be like, well, I got to wait for this game to start. Come and chat on Autograph. I will be out there. Should be a ton of fun. So again, go download the app on your favorite app store. It's just called Autograph. You can download it easily. It's free, and you can use code PACKADAY when signing up. So make sure to go do that. All right, let's get to the injury report for this game. Just full transparency, I don't have the full injury report as of yet. I'm recording this at about 3 p.m. on Friday. Probably could have waited about 20 more minutes, but I was on a little bit of a time crunch to get this recorded. So from a Packers standpoint, we did learn from Matt LaFleur that Edgerrin Cooper is going to be out of this game. We already know that Jair Alexander is going to be out of this game. And those are really the two players that had any level of like question mark, right? So Edgerrin Cooper, Jair Alexander, both out. Huge losses for Green Bay. No two ways around it. Jair Alexander, phenomenal corner, phenomenal cover corner. You would certainly like to have him against Deebo Samuel and Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall, their first round pick. Like, you'd love to have him in this game. You'd love to have him in every game. It's not going to be the case. He's going to be out for a while yet with that PCL injury. And then Edgerrin Cooper, hamstring injury. He did not practice again on Friday. Matt LaFleur mentioned he will be out for this one. And that also means he could be in jeopardy of a Thursday game next week. Matt LaFleur mentioned that as well, that there is some concern just with it being a short week. So we'll keep an eye on that, but no Edgerrin Cooper against the Niners. Now that means Quay Walker, Eric Wilson, and Isaiah McDuffie, the primary linebackers in this game. Maybe we get a little Tyron Hopper. Maybe we get Jamin Davis called up. We'll see. But my expectation would be the three linebackers that we've basically seen all year in some capacity in McDuffie and in Quay and obviously in Eric Wilson as well. So that's my guess at linebacker. And then at corner, I would assume that we're still going to get Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Valentine on the outside with Javon Bullard in the slot, Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney back at safety. So those are the expectations, but you never quite know. Things could change on the fly, and we'll see what type of game plan Green Bay and Jeff Hafley has for this one on defense without Jair and without Edgerrin Cooper. Now, a bigger update even from the 49ers side, Brock Purdy, Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, all did not practice on Friday. And Brock Purdy had an MRI in his shoulder on Friday. It does not seem to be trending well for Brock Purdy and this 49ers team. They are so beat up, and now you could be looking at Brandon Allen as their starting quarterback, right? Trent Williams is first team, all-pro, Hall of Fame left tackle. Nick Bosa is one of the best pass rushers in all of football. I mean, this game swings in a significant direction if those three players cannot play. And over the course of the next 24 hours-ish, figuring out which of these three can, like if all three can and are at like 85-90% of their powers, right? That changes it huge in San Francisco's favor, at least like gives them a much better chance, right? And if they can't play, I mean, it just swings all the way in Green Bay's favor. And it's not to say that it's easy. Green Bay has definitely lost dumber games in the past. I know Aaron Nagler tweeted this one out, and I talked about it earlier this week as well. But like, remember when the Cowboys were the team that they couldn't beat, and then finally you got Jason Garrett at starting quarterback, and you're like, all right, on Thanksgiving, nonetheless, really close in proximity, you're like, all right, now finally the Packers are going to be able to beat this Cowboys team with their third string quarterback. Nope. Jason Garrett still beat the Packers on that day. So this is not a walk in the park, San Francisco's still going to be desperate in some way. They're going in with like house money of like, what do we have to lose? Everyone's out, right? So even if that is the case, it's not going to be easy for Green Bay, but let's just be real. It is easier if all three of those guys are out. We'll keep an eye on that. We'll go over all of it when we get to our pregame episode on Sunday. So keep an eye out for that. We'll break down all the injuries, the actual injury report, who's questionable, who's out, and what it could mean for this game. And with that, we're going to get to our main topic for today, which is quite frankly, and honestly, with brutal honesty, the failures of the front office to better address this cornerback position on the team. Let's look at it, right? Because let's start by looking at what this team did in the offseason at the cornerback position. They brought back Keyshawn Nixon on a 3-year, $18 million deal with $6.5 million guaranteed. And I think a piece of that was probably thinking, hey, these new dynamic kickoff rules are going to allow him to be that first team all pro kick returner again. Hasn't been that way. It's just been Keyshawn Nixon getting the ball at the Packers getting the ball at the 30 every single time, and Keyshawn mostly not being able to return. And even when he has, it has been far from dynamic so far. So they're not getting the kick return aspect. They are getting a starting corner out of him. He's played in the slot. He's played on the outside. We'll talk more about what the result of that has been in just a moment, but 3 years, $18 million, $6.5 million guaranteed for Keyshawn Nixon. They gave Corey Ballantyne a 1-year, $2.1 million deal, which is, by the way, double a vet minimum. And he's not exactly just getting the vet minimum here, and it's like, oh, well, we'll take this flyer guy at the back of the roster. No, he got a $2.1 million deal. So that's an interesting move that they made as well. And then the other thing that they did, not necessarily to bring somebody in or bring somebody back, but they did not pick up Eric Stokes' fifth-year option. So those were really the three moves that they kind of made in the offseason. They also drafted Kalen King at the very end of the seventh round, although they released him, of course, and added him back onto the practice squad. Returning to the team were Eric Stokes, even though they declined his fifth-year option, Jaire Alexander, and Carrington Ballantyne. So here's what Brian Gutekunst and the Packers were betting on as they were going into the season. They were betting that Keyshawn Nixon could perform as a full-time starting cornerback. That was a contract that you give to a starting nickel in this league. They were betting that he could come in, own that spot, and be a good starting nickel in the NFL, period, end of story. Number two, they were certainly betting that Jaire could stay healthy enough through the course of the season that they would get a big enough return on their investment and he could be a huge part of this team. Or not only that, because it's not like they had a decision, they weren't going to release him based on the salary cap hits and things like that this year, but by not addressing the position in a greater way, they're basically saying, we think he's going to be able to stay healthy, or at least we're confident that there's a good chance he can stay healthy. They were betting that Eric Stokes was going to be able to return from his injury and get closer to the form that he was as a rookie when he was a solid starting corner for this team, that he was going to be a starting corner in the NFL and that those injury issues and his poor play was behind him. They were betting that Carrington Ballantyne was going to take a second year jump, and they were betting that somebody like either Corey Ballantyne or a Kalen King or some other undrafted free agent guy that would come across would be able to come in and be a versatile number five corner and fill in where needed if emergencies would happen. That's basically what Green Bay was betting on with the way that they built this corner roster. They're betting on Nixon being a starter, Jaire staying healthy, Stokes returning to starting form, Carrington Ballantyne taking a jump, and then the rest of the corners basically vying for that number five spot and somebody hopefully capable of being a solid backup slash special teams guy. That was the bet. The risk involved in that bet is that Keyshawn Nixon, up until this point, had never performed as a solid, good, full-time starting corner in the NFL. He was fine in the slot for the most part a season ago, got a little bit better as the season went along, but you were expecting him to be better in his second year as a slot corner, and that's what they were sort of risking in that situation. There was the risk that he may not be able to be a good starting full-time corner. They were having a risk that Jaire would not be able to stay healthy, and he had not been able to stay healthy for the better part of 3 years coming into this season. He was mostly healthy in 2023, so maybe that's what they were betting on here, but there was a significant risk about Jaire's injuries. There's a significant risk going into this season with Eric Stokes. Not only did he have two consecutive years where he basically missed almost all of the last 2 years, but prior to the injury in 2022, he looked awful. I mean, awful in 2022, you know, in his second year, looked brutal before the injury. Then the injury happens, then another injury, then another injury. He comes back for a couple games in 2023, doesn't look good in those games. So there's significant risk of just A, was he going to be able to play at the same level, period? And then B, even if he was, like, what does that level look like? Can he be a decent starter in this league? the risk was that while Carrington Valentine, there was definitely promise and potential there. If you go back and look at his rookie season, it's fine. It's nice. You don't hate it, but it wasn't a starting quality NFL corner in 2023. So you're projecting that jump in 2024. That's a risk. And then the rest of the corners, and the risk here is that there was extremely limited upside with any other corner on the team, whether that's Robert Rochelle, Kalen King, or anyone else that was an undrafted free agent or happened to, you know, make it on the roster as a end of the roster guy at any point that was vying for any playing time. There was very limited upside there. So a ton of risk, right? Could Keyshawn be a starting corner? Could Jair stay healthy? Could Eric Stokes get back to playing as a starting corner? Could Carrington Valentine take a jump? And could the rest of the corners have any sort of upside whatsoever? There's plenty of risk there. In fact, I think the huge thing here is that there was not one thing that you could count on. There's not one player in this cornerback room that you could say, I feel super comfortable about this. The one you feel best about, Jair, is the one that can't stay healthy. And then all the other ones, to some extent, were a massive projection. And I think any one of these are an okay risk to take. If you wanted to risk a three-year, $18 million contract that Keyshawn Nixon could be a full-time starter, I understand that risk on one level, right? If you wanted to risk that Jair Alexander would be able to stay healthy through the course of the year, you didn't have much option anyway, but I could somewhat understand that risk. He was mostly healthy in 2023. If you wanted to risk that Eric Stokes could come back healthy and play like he did as a rookie, I think that's a significant amount of risk, but on its own, I can kind of understand. There's not a ton of financial risk in doing that. They probably just weren't going to cut him, right? Carrington Valentine, expecting him to potentially take a jump or hoping he could take a jump, that I totally understand. And I get at your number five corner, yeah, you're probably not going to have a great answer, but I can understand feeling like Corey Ballantyne could take that spot. He did a great job filling in 2023, and he's a good special teams player. So I could understand that as well. Any one of these, I can understand. I don't have a major issue with. All five of them combined into one crazy level of risk, you're not exactly diversifying your portfolio with some safe options and some risk and some you are just all in the high risk category at corner altogether, period. End of story. There's no silver lining here of there's no risk here. No, there was risk in every single one of those corners. There wasn't one thing that you could point to that I feel like I have a 90% good feeling that this is going to work out in the right direction. This is a big one. San Francisco is coming to Green Bay for an epic matchup on Sunday afternoon. And with a recent San Francisco loss, Green Bay could just put their playoff odds in jeopardy. But that's not all we're looking forward to this week. We're also looking forward to another winning week on Prize Picks. With Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, yeah, I'm guessing Christian McCaffrey is going to get his against Green Bay's defense, but I also expect a huge week from both Jaden Reed and Tucker Kraft. The best part, whoever you want to go with, there are a ton of options out there that you can choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app, using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey everyone, with the holidays creeping up faster than your great aunt's fruitcake recipe, I've got something way better to share with you. If you want to look sharp for all those festive gatherings and maybe finally win that best groomed at the family dinner award, check out the latest masterpiece from Manscaped, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver. Trust me, it's like Rudolph for your face, guiding you to a smooth, irritation-free shave. Head over to manscaped.com and join the over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Now, you may have recently seen Mustache Andy lately. It was a beautiful sight to behold, and that wouldn't have been possible without the Chairman Pro's Flex Adjust technology, which is basically like the holiday miracle of shaving. And when I needed even more precision to get that mustache look just right, there was the Precision Lock. And when you lock it in, the blade head sits firm so you can achieve a more precise shave, and that's exactly what I did. So get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. What are you waiting for? So it's not necessarily that any one of those is a bad thing. It's that all of them together are just a potential for this powder keg just to go completely up in smoke, and you're left with nothing that you have tangible. And what has the outcome been? Well, let's go one by one. Keyshawn Nixon is a full-time starting corner. He stayed healthy. There's ups and downs. He is a probably slightly below average replacement level corner in the NFL. I'll say once again, if that's your 11th guy on defense, it's not catastrophic. It's not the worst thing in the world, right? But when Jair Alexander's out, more on that in just a moment, and Carrington Valentine doesn't step up and Eric Stokes doesn't step up, and all of a sudden, like, you could make an argument that Keyshawn Nixon has to be corner one on this team. That is a massive issue. And he is nowhere near ready to be that, nor capable of being that. So if you've got two really good corners on the outside, two really good safeties on the back end, and Keyshawn Nixon is kind of like the one guy, right? Like that, you're fine. You're more than fine. But if all of a sudden Keyshawn Nixon has to work his way up where he's kind of like the number one corner on the team, you have major problems. That outcome has not been good. Jair has not stayed healthy. He has had major injury issues once again, and this PCL injury is massively concerning. Eric Stokes has been completely benched. He played 4 snaps last week. He went from the unquestioned starter at corner, didn't even rotate in Carrington Valentine in the offseason at mini camp or training camp. It was just Eric Stokes. They just gave it to him. They just rolled it out and said, you're going to be the starting corner. And he answered and responded by getting completely benched by basically week 11. And his snaps started to wane. He never stepped up. And even in the 4 snaps last week, didn't look good. Even when you're giving him a small sample size, it's just done. There's nothing there. It's over. That has gone as a complete nightmare. And I don't think, quite frankly, it's been talked about enough of how, again, he was sort of just the guy opposite Jair, all camp and everything. And now last week, he basically got completely benched. I think for the most part, it's because everyone wanted it and was expecting it and hoping for it. And it took Green Bay too long to get to that point. But it is still a massive failure that he has gone from the starter to basically completely benched at this point. Carrington Valentine, of all of them, I'm still okay with. I like the way that he played last week, and I think there's a really good player in there. I really, really do. I like the upside of Carrington Valentine. I don't hate this in any way, but Green Bay, it took them to week 11 to really feel like they could put enough on his plate where they trusted him as a starter. And if nothing else, Carrington Valentine has not taken a big step in year two. If anything, he kind of looks very similar to the player that we saw in year one. Because if he did take a big step in year two, we're not even talking about this, right? We're talking about a really good starting corner in Carrington Valentine, and that mitigates a lot of the conversation that we're having right now in general. So I like Carrington Valentine on the team. I think he's a good player. I'm so happy that he's now starting ahead of Eric Stokes. Hopefully Green Bay doesn't revert back this week and start something crazy again. But I'm okay with this. But at minimum, again, we have not seen a significant step. And the rest of the corners, right? Kalen King, the one guy that they drafted, ends up being cut before they started camp. He's a practice squad guy. Even when calling corners up, they exhaust Robert Rochelle's call-ups. They used 2 call-ups already for Kamal Haddon, who was a guy that they picked up, you know, after Kalen King, right? He was a waiver at the, or he got cut during the cutdowns, and he eventually made his way to the Packers practice squad. They've called him up before Kalen King, so Kalen King has not stepped up. I mean, Robert Rochelle is a special teams guy, and again, maybe Kamal Haddon turns into something at some point, but he has not shown that in any particular, or at least have not had the opportunity to show that. So no other corners have shown the upside. So just again, repeat this. The outcome that you got was a fine, okay replacement level corner in Keyshawn Nixon, not what you were probably hoping for, that's had to do too much and is almost elevated to that number one corner spot. Jair has not stayed healthy. Stokes has been benched. Valentine has not taken a significant step, if a step at all. And the rest of the corners have not stepped up in any real appreciative way, right? That's where they're at. They did not do a good enough job when it came to building this team. There was far too much risk. And with that risk came the rewards that you are now reaping because of all that risk that existed at the corner position. And now, in order to understand what maybe Green Bay could have done differently, we have to understand what opportunities were out there. And I do want to be fully just real here for a second. The options for Green Bay for improving the cornerback room in the offseason were not great / complicated at best, but there were options that were out there. Number one is free agency. And this is where the biggest thing is. You go down the laundry list of corners that were signed in free agency, and almost to a T, none of them have worked out. Like, it has been bust after bust after bust, bad contract, and there just wasn't a ton out there in free agency at corner. The one player that you can argue that Green Bay probably should have taken a better look at was Kendall Fuller, who even seemingly the day that he signed went for way less than he should have. He signed a 2-year, $15 million deal. That's a deal that Green Bay absolutely should have looked at when signing, you know, when looking at the corner position in the offseason. And so much so, like, it seems rather ridiculous, quite frankly, that you would give, you know, Keyshawn Nixon 3 years, 18, when Kendall Fuller's out there for 2 years, 15. Do you want Keyshawn for $6 million a year or Kendall Fuller for $7.5 million per year? And again, Kendall Fuller for one last year, right? In a good way, meaning you don't have to give him that third season on a contract. To me, given the choice, even just not even with the benefit of hindsight, right? Given the choice between Kendall Fuller at 2 years, 15, or Keyshawn Nixon at 3 years, 18, it's not even a conversation. Now, these are easy things for us to say on the outside. It's possible that, you know, Goody picks up the phone. This is a mouse, not a phone, by the way, but picks up the phone and says, talks to Kendall Fuller's agent, says, we would like Kendall to come be a member of the Green Bay Packers. We will offer him 3 years, or sorry, 2 years, $16 million, one more million than Miami's willing to give. And the agent might call back and say, Kendall Fuller has no interest whatsoever in playing for the Green Bay Packers. He does not want to play in the cold. He wants to go to Miami. Also, Miami has fewer taxes in Florida. We're going to go to Miami and play there. So it sounds great on paper, right? Like we could just say, we can play fantasy GM and say, yep, we should have done Kendall Fuller instead. It may not work that easy. Now, we don't know if Goody picked up the phone at all. We don't know if there's any interest whatsoever. But even if there was, they may have just hung up on him and said, nope, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to Miami. And like, you can understand, right? Miami's not doesn't sound so bad, but we don't know the situations there, but that's one that they definitely could have looked at. Again, and in full transparency, the rest of the free agency class at corner has been basically a pile of crap. It hasn't worked out very well. So there wasn't a lot out there. Giving big free agent money to any of the other corners that got any of the money would not have worked out well. L'Jarius Sneed, if they wanted to do that, like make a massive move, they would have to give him the massive contract. Probably would have cost them Xavier McKinney. Sneed had not been playing well, was one of PFF's lowest graded corners, and they would have had to give up a massive draft pick in doing so as well. That would have been a nightmare for the Packers. So there wasn't a lot that was out there from a free agency standpoint that made sense. From a trade standpoint, they could have done the Detroit Lions deal. They traded for Carlton Davis from Tampa. Would have been a nice deal for Green Bay. The Packers actually had the pick right before the Detroit Lions pick. They had the Tyron Hopper pick, which they was one pick before what Detroit gave up for Carlton Davis. So in a theoretical world, they could have given up that Tyron Hopper pick for Carlton Davis, who's on a one-year $4.5 million deal, would not have made any real difference towards the salary cap. They also would have received 2024 and 2025, six-round picks, I think it was, in return back. So they got 2 six-round picks that they got back in that trade as well. So they would have given up Tyron Hopper, who, by the way, hasn't played a snap and doesn't seem anywhere near to. They would have gotten Carlton Davis for a year, taking a $4 million, probably $3 million cap hit because you take Tyron Hopper's off the book, $3 additional million that it would have cost. And then you would have gotten 2 six-round picks back in exchange, which, by the way, just Tyron Hopper for 2 six-round picks right now doesn't look like the worst trade in the world either, right? They may have gotten better players with those selections than they did with Tyron Hopper. So they could have done that. Now, that's a little bit tough because we know how Goody values his top 100 draft picks, right? Like, they probably were never going to do that. It also would have been a weird connotation of, hey, we gave up, really good corner already in Rasul Douglas to get that Tyron Hopper pick. And now we're going to take that Tyron Hopper pick and trade it for a veteran corner who only has 1 year left on his deal. Like, it just would have been weird optics. It would have been a weird situation to do, but I wouldn't have hated it. And you could have understood it to some extent, because when they traded Douglas, team was bad. When they trade for Carlton Davis, team was good. In a lot of ways, that makes sense. And honestly, like, the difference between Douglas and Carlton Davis, like, not that great, right? In fact, I would probably rather have Carlton Davis. So you could make the argument. Plus, you got 2 six-rounders back. They could have done that. That was an option that was out there for them. And then, of course, the draft. Now, this is where it's complicated, right? So they took Jordan Morgan with pick 25. Some players that were out there at the time, Nate Wiggins, who's been a 63.4 overall grade for PFF. He's played pretty darn well for Baltimore so far. Cooper DeJean, I know everyone's favorite. Everyone wanted him at the time. 78.1 grade for Philly so far. He's played really well as of late. Kool-Aid McKinstry, 69.8 grade for the Saints. Kamari Lassiter, 69.8 grade for the Texans. He's been really good in Houston. And then Max Melton was a 50.7 grade so far for Arizona. I don't think they ever would have taken him in the first round. Arguably Lassiter, probably McKinstry either. But DeJean and Wiggins were there. Now, where it's complicated is Wiggins was never probably going to be on their board. He is just not their type of corner whatsoever. I made the argument pre-draft that I didn't think Cooper DeJean was going to be on their board. And they had probably a couple opportunities to get him and didn't draft him, which made me believe that he probably wasn't exactly their cup of tea either. Again, and I don't think in the first round, McKinstry, Lassiter, or Max Melton were probably in that conversation. And as much as I would love a corner at that spot, more often than not, building in the trenches is going to be more important. So if Jordan Morgan goes on to be a good to solid right guard in the league or whatever position he ends up playing, that's going to end up paying probably more dividends than even a really good corner is going to, because offensive line and trenches are so important and so hard to find. So I don't necessarily hate that. I don't necessarily want to take Jordan Morgan off the board, but let's just be real. There were cornerback options that were out there. All right, so they take Jordan Morgan. Now you've got pick 41. Remember, they took 41 and moved down, I think, was it to 45 to draft Edgerrin Cooper, but they were at pick 41. And I'll be real here again. I don't necessarily want to see Edgerrin Cooper off this team, right? So I don't really want to switch Edgerrin Cooper out here, but there were corners available. At pick 41, Kool-Aid McKinstry was still available. Kamari Lassiter was still available. Max Melton was still available. And Mike Sanristil, for the Commanders, who's played really well, was still available. He's got a 68.0 grade so far in the season and played is coming off his best game of the year a week ago. So you had more corners that were available at 41. They moved down from 41 to 45. And then even at 45, I believe Sanristil was still available at that point when they picked Edgerrin Cooper. So in the second round there, they could have taken somebody. At pick 58, when they took Javon Bullard, I will say it one more time. I don't really want to see Javon Bullard off this team. I'm very happy that they took Javon Bullard, right? Ennis Rakeshaw was there. Rakeshaw has not been good for Detroit. He can't get on the field. And when he has, he's had a poor PFF grade, 42.8. But Renardo Green, who is going to be starting this week for San Francisco, guy I really loved in the draft, has been phenomenal. 79.2 grade for PFF so far. It's been one of the best rookie corners that's been out there. They could have had him instead of Javon Bullard. And if we're just being honest, would you rather have a great starting corner or a great slot slash safety guy? You'd take the corner, right? So Renardo Green was out there. Andrew Phillips, 84.6 grade so far. He was out there as well when they took Javon Bullard. Again, do I want to see Javon Bullard off this team? Not really, but I'll say it once again. There were options that were out there at corner. Here's the big one at pick 88 and pick 91. They had both obviously Tyron Hopper and Marshawn Lloyd that they took in those spots. Lloyd at 88 and then Hopper at 91. Jerrion Jones, the corner, was out there. The guy who picked off Jordan Love in the Jaguars game, like, he was out there and available. 63.8 grade as a starting corner so far. Like, though, if you could have Jerrion Jones as a starting corner over either Hopper or Lloyd, who have been non-factors on this team, one due to injury, one due to just they don't trust him and haven't played him, that would have changed things quite a bit there as well. So I'll say it one more time. The free agency class was bad, but they definitely could have looked at Kendall Fuller. The trade, do I think they would have made that deal for Carlton Davis? Probably not. That's not a Goody type trade, right? But the option was out there. Do I want to necessarily take some of those early picks off the board? No, but there were options in the first, both times in the second round and both times in the third round to go out and get players who have been really good corners as rookies. Now, rounds 4 through 7 were pretty brutal for corners. There's been nobody that's really stepped up in that entire range so far. So anything after the first 100 picks, it would have been difficult to find that next guy, but they had options. So yes, the free agent market was weak. I understand the Morgan pick. I don't really want to take back the Cooper or Bullard picks. Would I trade Lloyd or Hopper for, you know, Jerrion Jones? Yes, in a millisecond, but that's like the one sweet spot. And sometimes you just, you know, don't get that one right. It's understandable. There wasn't much again from rounds 4 through 7. And it's tough to trade a third round pick when you just picked up that third round pick by trading away a veteran corner. So I can understand all this. That's why I said it's complicated. And then you might say, well, Andy, what about the trade deadline? Because there were players that got traded at the trade deadline. Could they not have done something there? Well, there were two corners that were traded. Marshawn Lattimore, who is out again this week. I hear all the time of like, why didn't the Packers trade for Marshawn Lattimore when all they have is injuries at their corner position? Well, Marshawn Lattimore has been one of the most oft-injured corners in the NFL. And he is now having a hamstring injury, which is probably even worse in Green Bay because that's how things work. And he's going to miss his third consecutive game since they acquired him. So you're giving up all that draft capital and he hasn't even played yet. So that I don't think that would have been the way to go. And I don't think that's, again, the trade that I probably would have made in that situation. Tre'Davious White couldn't even get on the field for the Rams. He got traded for a swap of 7th-round picks. They probably should have done that. He had one game in Baltimore so far. He had an 83.4 grade in that game. It probably would have been worth the flyer at that point in time, especially knowing that there was a PCL injury for Jaire Alexander. Like, just take the chance on it. But at the time, if you would have asked me, I would have said, no, I really don't have any interest in the washed up corner who couldn't even get on the field for a Rams team who had bad cornerback play. So again, I can understand each of these sort of individual decisions by Goody and company, but the truth of the matter at the end of the day is that this cornerback room is not good enough. They had to find something. They had to sort of know that the room as is had far too much risk and there was question marks everywhere. And the number one job of a GM, I say it all the time, is to give yourself outs, to make it so that if something goes wrong, you have another option. Goody gave himself a multitude of at least four different options, right? Nixon, Jair, Eric Stokes, Carrington Valentine. A player they were hoping is really good and just needed to stay healthy. A player who they were taking a gamble on after seeing him play in the slot all last year. A player in his second year who they were hoping was going to take a jump. And a former first-round pick that they were hoping was going to return to form. And they really sort of went 0 for 4 in those. And nobody else has stepped up. But I think if you look at it both at the time and with the benefit of hindsight, you can understand why there was so much risk in doing that and why it has gone the way that it has. It probably unlucky to some extent that not one of those bets pays off, right? At least in a significant enough way. But you also, you know, you gamble with that stuff and sometimes you're left with empty. You go all in and you get called and the other hand's better, you're still out of chips. It may be unlucky. You may have had the better hand when you went into it, but if the three or five, I guess, cards if we're playing Texas Hold'em come up the wrong way, you're left empty-handed and you gave yourself no additional outs. And right now at corner, it feels like Green Bay is just sort of empty-handed and there are very, very few outs at this point. Maybe Jair Alexander can come back at some point. Maybe Carrington Valentine steps up in a significant way and can look like a really good starting corner. And it's not like some of their teams in the past, like in 2010, haven't overcome some significant injuries to become actually better. And maybe this is what Carrington Valentine needs. Maybe this is exactly what he needs. Do I think that with a really good pass rush, that maybe Nixon and Valentine on the outside with Bullard in the slot and Williams and McKinney at safety could be good enough? Yeah, I think that they could be maybe good enough if everything else turns out right. But this issue is even made worse by the fact that this team can't rush the passer with four guys, which is making you bring more pressure, which is keeping corners on an island. They don't have the corners to play on an island, and you're just in no man's land if you're Jeff Hafley. And this all sort of goes back to not getting the corners upgraded the way that you needed to in a significant way in the offseason. And you might point back to, well, what about the defensive line? You know, you could say the same thing. I disagree because we've seen a lot of these defensive linemen already play well. You know, Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary have had very good seasons in Green Bay. Kenny Clark has been the consummate professional. Like every year you can count on him. Devontae Wyatt and LVN, at least in signs and flashes the last couple of years, had shown like there could be something there. Kingsley Nigbari is a more than solid rotational defensive end, right? TJ Slayton is like there. Yes, there was some risk on the defensive line, but this was expected to be more of a strength going into the season. There was less risk. It felt like there was a baseline there. Where even if LVN and Devontae Wyatt like don't take that step, right? Where you still have Preston and Gary on the outside and Clark and Slayton and Carl Brooks. And it feels like in Kingsley and Igbari, like you had a baseline there of like, you feel like at worst, this is like solid to good, right? And it's just, unfortunately that has bottomed out and everyone's kind of taken a step back. I can understand like that you didn't expect that to happen. And it's hard to see that level coming where just everything drops out of the bottom and everyone ends up playing worse than you expected. That's a different story. That's probably more on the coaching Jason Rebrovich side of things than it is to me from a GM side of things. Now we can talk about like the upside plays in LVN and Wyatt and to an extent Rashawn Gary and things like that. And is there a different way to go about it? That's another conversation for another day. But I can understand why he went into the season with the defensive line that he did and feeling pretty darn comfortable about it. Not to mention he had 11 players rostered on that line in total. Like you got to figure out a way to not get as significantly worse as they have basically done so through the course of this season. And again, the corner issue is just made worse by the fact that the pass rush has been way worse than expected. So hopefully Jair can make his way back. Hopefully some of these defensive backs can take a step up and just start to play better. But if they can't, and it would not be a shock if they cannot, it will probably end to a disappointing result at the end of the season. Meaning, I don't think that this team with the pass rush is where it's at right now, and a corner room that is without Jair Alexander, if that ends up being the case, can go through a four-game Super Bowl run. And man, do I hope that I would be wrong in that assessment, because I'm going to kind of need to be, right? Because again, maybe Jair comes back and everything's fine. Maybe that's the case, that'd be great. But if not, they're going to have to probably do this without their best cover corner when they need him most. And it's a brutal gut shot, but I think Goody understood to some extent some of the risks that he was taking going into this year. And unfortunately, those gambles have not paid off. And it's hurt Green Bay in a fairly significant way. That's going to do it for me today. I will be back tomorrow previewing the 49ers and the Packers. You're not going to want to miss that. We'll go through the entire injury report, inactive expectations, and keys to the game. Always love doing that episode, so make sure to check it out. Follow, like, subscribe, check out those Packaday podcast memberships. Give those 5-star reviews. I will see you then. All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Mo Sada, Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, SoCal Pack, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, and Dan Gesford. I appreciate you guys a ton, but until next time, And as always, go Pack Go.